Chapter 22. She slipped through the water that did not murmur even at our passage, shadowy and silent like a phantom sea. At midnight I went on deck, and to my mate's great surprise put the ship round on the other tack. His terrible whiskers flitted round me in silent criticism. I certainly should not have done it, if it had been only a question of getting out of that sleepy gulf as quickly as possible. I believe he told the second mate, who relieved him, that it was a great want of judgment. The other only yawned. That intolerable cub shuffled about so sleepily, and lolled against the rails in such a slack, improper fashion that I came down on him sharply. Aren't you properly awake yet?
Yes, sir.
I am awake. Well, then, be good enough to hold yourself, as if you were. And keep a lookout. If there's any current, we'll be closing with some islands before daylight. The east side of the gulf is fringed with islands, some solitary, others in groups. On the blue background of the high coast they seem to float on silvery patches of calm water, arid and gray, or dark green, and rounded like clumps of evergreen bushes, with the larger ones, a mile or two long, showing the outlines of ridges, ribs of gray rock under the dank mantle of matted leafage. Unknown to trade, to travel, almost to geography, the manner of life they harbor is an unsolved secret. There must be villages, settlements of fishermen at least on the largest of them, and some communication with the world is probably kept up by native craft. But all that forenoon, as we headed for them, fanned along by the faintest of breezes, I saw no sign of man or canoe in the field of the telescope I kept on pointing at the scattered group. At noon I gave no orders for a change of course, and the mate's whiskers became much concerned, and seemed to be offering themselves unduly to my notice. At last I said, I am going to stand right in. Quite in as far as I can take her. The stare of extreme surprise imparted an air of ferocity also to his eyes, and he looked truly terrific for a moment. We're not doing well in the middle of the gulf, I continued, casually. I'm going to look for the land breezes tonight. Bless my soul. Do you mean, sir, in the dark amongst the lot of all them islands and reefs and shoals? Well, if there are any regular land breezes at all on this coast, one must get close inshore to find them, mustn't one? Bless my soul, he exclaimed again under his breath. All that afternoon he wore a dreamy, contemplative appearance which in him was a mark of perplexity. After dinner I went into my stateroom, as if I meant to take some rest. There we two bent our dark heads over a half-unrolled chart lying on my bed. There, I said. T's got to be Koh-ring. I've been looking at it ever since sunrise. It has got two hills and a low point. It must be inhabited. And on the coast opposite there is what looks like the mouth of a biggish river with some town, no doubt, not far up. It's the best chance for you, that I can see. Anything. Koh-ring let it be. He looked thoughtfully at the chart, as if surveying chances and distances from a lofty height and following with his eyes his own figure wandering on the blank land of Cochin China, and then passing off that piece of paper clean out of sight into uncharted regions. And it was as if the ship had two captains, to plan her course for her. I had been so worried and restless running up and down that I had not had the patience to dress that day. I had remained in my sleeping suit, with straw slippers and a soft floppy hat. The closeness of the heat in the gulf had been most oppressive, and the crew were used to see me wandering in that airy attire. She will clear the south point as she heads now, I whispered into his ear. Goodness only knows when, though, but certainly after dark. I let her into half a mile, as far as I may be able to judge in the dark. Be careful, he murmured, warningly, and I realized suddenly that all my future, the only future for which I was fit, would perhaps go irretrievably to pieces in any mishap to my first command. I could not stop a moment longer in the room. I motioned him to get out of sight, and made my way on the poop. That unplayful cub had the watch. I walked up and down for a while thinking things out, then beckoned him over. send a couple of hands to open the two quarterdeck ports, I said, mildly. He actually had the impudence, or else so forgot himself in his wonder at such an incomprehensible order, as to repeat. Open the quarterdeck ports. What for, sir? The only reason you need concern yourself about is because I tell you to do so. Have them open wide and fastened properly. He reddened and went off, but I believe made some jeering remark to the carpenter as to the sensible practice of ventilating a ship's quarter deck. I know he popped into the mate's cabin to impart the fact to him, because the whiskers came on deck, as it were by chance, and stole glances at me from below for signs of lunacy or drunkenness, I suppose. A little before supper, feeling more restless than ever, I rejoined, for a moment, my second self. And to find him sitting so quietly was surprising, like something against nature, inhuman. I developed my plan in a hurried whisper. I shall stand in as close as I dare, and then put around. I shall presently find means to smuggle you out of here into the sail locker, which communicates with the lobby. But there is an opening, a sort of square for hauling the sails out, which gives straight on the quarter deck, and which is never closed in fine weather, so as to give air to the sails. Apostrophe when the ship's way is deadened in stays, and all the hands are aft at the main braces, you shall have a clear road to slip out, and get overboard through the open quarter deck port. I've had them both fastened up. Use a rope's end to lower yourself into the water so as to avoid a splash, you know. It could be heard, and cause some beastly complication. He kept silent for a while, then whispered, I understand. I won't be there to see you go, I began with an effort. He rest. I only hope I have understood to. You have. From first to last, and for the first time there seemed to be a faltering, something strained in his whisper. He caught hold of my arm, but the ringing of the supper bell made me start. He didn't, though. He only released his grip. After supper I didn't come below again till well past 8 o'clock. The faint, steady breeze was loaded with dew, and the wet, darkened sails held all there was of propelling power in it. The night, clear and starry, sparkled darkly, and the opaque, lightless patches shifting slowly against the low stars were the drifting islets. On the port bow there was a big one more distant, and shadowily imposing by the great space of sky it eclipsed. On opening the door I had a back view of my very own self looking at a chart. He had come out of the recess, and was standing near the table. Quite dark enough, I whispered. He stepped back and leaned against my bed with a level, quiet glance. I sat on the couch. We had nothing to say to each other. Over our heads the officer of the watch moved here and there. Then I heard him move quickly. I knew what that meant. He was making for the companion, and presently his voice was outside my door. We are drawing in pretty fast, sir. Land looks rather close. Very well, I answered. I'm coming on deck directly. I waited till he was gone out of the cuddy, then rose. My double moved too. The time had come to exchange our last whispers, for neither of us was ever to hear each other's natural voice. Look here. I opened a drawer, and took out 3 sovereigns. Take this, anyhow. I've got 6, and I'd give you the lot, only I must keep a little money to buy some fruit and vegetables for the crew from native boats as we go through Sunda Straits. He shook his head. Take it, I urged him, whispering desperately. Oh, one can tell what, he smiled, and slapped meaningly the only pocket of the sleeping jacket. It was not safe, certainly. But I produced a large old silk handkerchief of mine, and tying the 3 pieces of gold in a corner, pressed it on him. He was touched, I suppose, because he took it at last, and tied it quickly round his waist under the jacket, on his bare skin. Our eyes met. Several seconds elapsed, till, our glances still mingled, I extended my hand, and turned the lamp out. Then I passed through the cuddy, leaving the door of my room wide open. Steward. He was still lingering in the pantry in the greatness of his zeal, giving a rub up to a plated cruet stand the last thing before going to bed. Being careful not to wake up the maid, whose room was opposite, I spoke in an undertone. He looked round anxiously. Can you get me a little hot water from the galley? I am afraid, sir, the galley fire's been out for some time now. Go and see. He fled up the stairs. Now, I whispered, loudly, into the saloon too loudly, perhaps, but I was afraid I couldn't make a sound. He was by my side in an instant. The double captain slipped past the stairs through a tiny dark passage. A sliding door. We were in the sail locker, scrambling on our knees over the sails. A sudden thought struck me. I saw myself wandering barefooted, bareheaded, the sun beating on my dark poll. I snatched off my floppy hat, and tried hurriedly in the dark, to ram it on my other self. He dodged and fended off silently. I wonder what he thought had come to me, before he understood and suddenly desisted. Our hands met gropingly, lingered united in a steady, motionless clasp for a second. No word was breathed by either of us when they separated. I was standing quietly by the pantry door when the steward returned. Sorry, sir. Kettle barely warm. Shall I light the spirit lamp? Never mind. I came out on deck slowly. It was now a matter of conscience. To shave the land as close as possible, for now he must go overboard, whenever the ship was put in stays. Must. There could be no going back for him. After a moment I walked over to leeward, and my heart flew into my mouth at the nearness of the land on the bow. Under any other circumstances I would not have held on a minute longer. The second mate had followed me anxiously. I looked until I felt I could command my voice. He will weather, I said then in a quiet tone. Are you going to try that, sir? He stammered out incredulously. I took no notice of him, and raised my tone just enough to be heard by the helmsman. Keep her good full. Good full, sir. The wind fanned my cheek, the sails slept, the world was silent. The strain of watching the dark loom of the land grow bigger and denser was too much for me. I had shut my eyes, because the ship must go closer. She must. The stillness was intolerable. Were we standing still? When I opened my eyes, the second view started my heart with a thump. The black southern hill of Koering seemed to hang right over the ship like a towering fragment of the everlasting night. On that enormous mass of blackness there was not a gleam to be seen, not a sound to be heard. It was gliding irresistibly toward us, and yet seemed already within reach of the hand. I saw the vague figures of the watch grouped in the waist, gazing in awed silence. Are you going on, sir? Inquired an unsteady voice at my elbow. I ignored it. I had to go on. Keep her full. Don't check her way. That won't do now, I said, warningly. I can't see the sails very well, the helmsman answered me, in strange, quavering tones. Was she close enough? Already she was, I won't say in the shadow of the land, but in the very blackness of it, already swallowed up as it were, gone too close to be recalled, gone from me altogether. Give the mate a call, I said to the young man who stood at my elbow as still as death. And he turned all hands up. My tone had a borrowed loudness reverberated from the height of the land. Several voices cried out together. Ye are all on deck, sir. Then stillness again, with the great shadow gliding closer, towering higher, without a light, without a sound. Such a hush had fallen on the ship, that she might have been a bark of the dead floating in slowly under the very gate of Erebus. My God! Where are we? It was the mate moaning at my elbow. He was thunderstruck, and as it were deprived of the moral support of his whiskers. He clapped his hands and absolutely cried out, lost. Be quiet, I said, sternly. He lowered his tone, but I saw the shadowy gesture of his despair. What are we doing here? Looking for the land wind. He made as if to tear his hair, and addressed me recklessly. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.